Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sidney Wildsmith.
Rob Wilder is actually a conservative guy. And maybe that's what inspired or drove him to cut costs, literally, to keep his expenses down. So free energy sounded pretty good, and he bought into it. So what's it like to really go solar with a big house in an upscale neighborhood in Southern California? You'll find out when we take a tour of the Wilder side of solar when we return with your Voice of the Earth here on the Wildside News. I can't help but play one more time a clip from that spokesman for the conservative American dream, Rush Limbaugh, as he described what it is environmental wackos want.
And once again, look at what the environmental wackos' solution to their imagined crisis is. A rollback of lifestyles to the days of poverty for all. Peasantry for all. To roll back civilized advances so that we all are nothing more than the equivalent of those living in the frozen tundra of the great Northeast in the 1400s, or even further. And it's not necessary.
Well, that was then, and this is now, and there is a whole new definition of what it means to be conservative. We explore that new vision as we continue our discussion with Wall Street's own Rob Wilder from his solar home in Southern California. You live in a beautiful home here. It's kind of an A-frame of sorts, and you've applied all sorts of energy-independent concepts here. Let's get some ideas here.
Okay, well, so for example, right now I'm sort of looking up at a chandelier. Now, when I got this chandelier and I brought it home, I noticed the box said that it consumes 720 watts, which... that's a lot of power. That's 3/4 of a kilowatt. And since we're making our own power, we're sort of sensitive. We notice how much things consume. So the point of this is that we switch simply to compact fluorescent bulbs. So instead of using incandescent bulbs, which is what most people use, which are also little heaters, by the way, we use these compact fluorescents, and they don't heat. I mean, an incandescent bulb is mostly heat. There's a little bit of light. But that little 60-watt bulb, 70-watt bulb, they add up when you've got them throughout the house. So we've put in these little bulbs that are about 10 watts each, and we're using about 1/8 of the power that it was rated. So we're getting the same amount of light at 1/8 of the power. And not only that, but I mentioned that incandescents are little heaters. They put out some light, but mostly heat. In the summer, you know, most folks are having to turn on their air conditioners and, in essence, use more power to cool down the excess power that are coming off of their light bulbs. We don't have to do that. Summertime, it's really very, very, it's nice. It's very pleasant in here. So we've got all of our light bulbs that are putting out mostly light, which is what we want, and not the heat that then has to be sucked away by an air conditioner that in turn uses another 2 or 3 kilowatts more. So I kind of like the idea of just preventing the need for power in the first place.
I've also lived entirely on solar. And as you say, one of the first things that begins to happen is you become naturally conscious of absolutely everything that you're doing that consumes energy. And lighting is one of your greatest demands, because without lights at night, things get really boring.
Well, that's right. You know, I just bought a lantern yesterday. It sticks in my mind. That runs off of, it runs off of batteries, and we use nickel cadmium batteries, not cadmium batteries that are powered by our solar. But where I was going to go with this is that it's a diode light. It's a lantern that uses diodes. And diodes, they're solid state semiconductors that, unlike filaments and incandescent or even compact fluorescents, use a tiny amount of electrons, very, very little bit of electricity relative to normal light. So I'm going to have a diode light lantern, which I think is pretty neat. We have outside, just for the sake of ease in part, but we have probably 15 or 20 solar lights, and all we have to do is stake them in the ground. I mean, literally just push them down. It takes, 20 seconds to put one in the ground, and there's no wiring, and they work automatically, and they work off of the sun, and we don't pay anything. And I kind of like that maintenance-free, you know, saving money up front and over the long term as well. No wiring needed. And so, you know, I've lived on a boat, for example, where I had to be really conscious of every bit of power that I use. Now, you know, we're in a house that's about 2,400 square feet. We've got a big screen TV in front of me, a pool behind me. You know, we're living in a pretty luxurious place, but the pool is heated by solar, and the pump that runs it is solar, and pool surface is a dark surface down below, so it warms up, you know, for free, all these things for free. And so all probably 5 months out of the year, we've got a very warm pool, 80, 85, 87 degrees. And it's all thanks to the sun. If one could visualize this in a nice, luxurious place, it's an acre in size, and we're certainly not skimping in any way. And yet, we're not having to rely on these foreign sources of energy, like I mentioned earlier, which makes me happy, and it's a patriotic thing, and it makes me proud.
I used to enjoy coming home and turning on my lights and other things, and realize that it just was there. And solar is so nice because there's no moving parts, no mechanisms, et cetera, et cetera. It's great. Let's go someplace else and continue this conversation.
Okay, so anything in particular you want?
Well, yeah, let's take a look at, let's go outside and, okay. And you can talk about your pool. Make sure it's run. Okay. I've gone outside. Beautiful sunny day here in Southern California. I'm standing outside the beautiful, very kind of a rural look, very hilly as San Diego is. And there's a pool. Let's talk about that.
Well, yeah, as I was just mentioning, the pool is, you know, simply got a dark plaster, which makes the water warmer by I imagine, a few degrees. We've got one of these creepy, crawly sort of pool cleaners, automatic, and the electricity running that, is, as I mentioned, or I'll talk about, is solar-powered. The heating for the pool is also solar, and that's solar thermal collectors that just run automatically through the pump. There's nothing to do. There's no maintenance. I imagine we've been here a few years, and I imagine in a few years we'll have to replace the collectors. They're just plastic, and I can do that myself, I'm sure, easily. So we've got a pool, and we're always happy with the fact that it's about 87 degrees. My wife doesn't swim when it's below 80, and this is thanks to solar, which, you know, our neighbors were telling us that they spend about $500 a month on electricity. They have a pool that they heat. They have fountains that they run. They've got a lot of things that we also have, but we're doing it all for free, and so I sort of like that. That's $6,000 a year they're paying. So, you know, as I look up, we've got solar panels, and well, those cost, I guess you could say, in a theoretical sense, they were $30,000. But I only wrote a check for $18,000 because the state of California paid a rebate, and they paid $12,000, and that went directly to the seller of the system and the installer. So, like I say, I only wrote a check for $18,000 for a 3.85 kilowatt system. Yeah, it puts out about 20 kilowatt hours a day in the summer, which is a fair amount of power. I mean, certainly, if you're thinking about your power consumption, that's plenty. In the winter, it puts out somewhat less than that, especially when it's rainy. So I've got these solar collectors that cost me $18,000, but actually it was less because the state of California also gives me $3,000 in a state tax credit. So it ends up costing me $15,000. And I have on the website wildershares.com, www.wildershares.com, I have a whole price breakdown where I show where each component costs and the installation. And basically, we're looking at about 10 to 13 years to pay back on that system. It would have been twice that without the state tax credit. So 10 to 13 years. And then we're switching here in Encinitas and San Diego in general to time of use metering, which will make solar even more of a value relative to the grid that everyone else is using. And then we'll have payback in about 7 years to maybe 10 years. So basically what I'm saying is that after 7 to 10 years, my electricity is all free. So every month, you know, I'm not paying a bill and I'm getting free electricity. The system is solid state. That is the panels up on my roof that everyone should have on their roof, because I see all these roofs in San Diego without solar panels, obviously. They're missing out. Our system is it's warrantied for 20 years, and it's gonna last, I feel robustly confident, well beyond 20 years. And so that's free electricity that we can hand off to our kids and our grandkids.
Let's go down and take a look at your power meter, because I think that's an interesting part of the story.
Great.
It's really a joy to be outside here, with Rob, because he's integrated a very nice lifestyle. As, you know, you're very in touch with the earth. Even though you're in Southern California. Here's what's fun. I'm now outside, actually, and I'm looking at the Duncan electric meter, and typically these things are supposed to spin in a counterclockwise direction. And as I look at this, it's spinning in a clockwise direction, which means what?
Well, this is just, I mean, no one ever pays attention to meters because they all sort of just run. They just spin and no one ever thinks about it. But if you sort of looked at ours and squinted and thought about it, it's running backwards, which is pretty neat. It's a simple bidirectional meter. That's what most meters are. They spin and there's some dials. And what people aren't used to seeing is one spinning backwards, which ours is doing right now, and at a pretty good clip. So what's happening is we're getting a credit during the day for all this power, excess power that we're putting into the grid. So we're feeding the solar power out to lots of other folks' homes. We're helping to power this neighborhood. And then at night, it runs sort of the regular way, like everyone else's. And we get, in essence, a credit during the day, and we use up that surplus at night. And then at the end of the month, you know, we like being ahead. Now, in the winter, currently, we're behind. And in the summer, when days are longer and the sun tends to be a little bit more robust on the panels, we're ahead in those months. So I'm trying to get to the point where we're going to be adding wind and microhydro to where we're just clearly in the black, so to speak. We're making much more power. And at that point, I want to bring in the electric car. And I'm excited about that, about not having to buy fossil fuels, gasoline, not relying on Middle East oil. And, you know, when I take my kids to school, when I do errands, in most things that you do, you're only running 5 miles, 10 miles in your car, unless your car can handle that fine. So that'll be truly exciting.
Well, as a matter of fact, this would be during the day powering up that car, which would be excellent. You've also integrated an interesting concept, because I think when some people think about putting big solar voltaic panels on their roofs, they've had to talk about the batteries. You're a battery-free zone here. That's something that has become practical because of the fact that now we have the meters that spin backwards.
Yeah, that's right. A lot of people, when they say to me, oh, you know, they hear I've got solar, they say to me, well, batteries, what is it like with batteries? And I tell them, you know, I don't use batteries. There's a bunch of reasons. One is I've got a little electric bike in my garage that uses a lead-acid battery, and that battery management is a real hassle. I mean, you have to pay attention to the battery, when you charge it, how much time you charge it, discharging. I'm not that kind of a guy. I'm like a put it in and forget it kind of person. Now, I like to tinker with things, but not with batteries. So I'm really happy with the fact that we just use the grid as a large battery. And what we're trying to do is set this up in a way that lots of folks will want to do this. Again, your Aunt Barbara will want to do this, who doesn't want to deal with batteries. So there's no need for batteries. We're better off without batteries, no battery management. It costs less, to be sure, to not have to use batteries. It really is much more sensible all the way around. Now, for folks who live off of the grid or who need firm power without interruption, then I can see the need for batteries. But in our case, no, we're happy as clams without it.
Now we're in the garage, nice garage. And by the way, over in the corner is the brains of this system. Talk a little bit about the brains.
Well, you know, we're looking at a couple of gray boxes, and I'll probably never have to worry about those gray boxes. One of them's the inverter. Well, actually, the inverter, after a number of years, will have to be replaced. That's the one part of this that sort of, you know, wears out, so to speak. And so, I don't know, I guess I can anticipate maybe 6 or 7, maybe 10 years, and it's going to need replacement, and I'll put in a new one. And that won't be very difficult. The next to it is a gray box, which is a web-based monitoring system, so I can monitor how much power we're making, how much energy the house is using. And that, again, it's all on the web at wildershares.com. And then over here is the electric bicycle that we were just chatting about. I don't like the battery. I wish it had nickel metal hydride, which is just or lithium ion, which is much more of a just forget about it battery. It just takes care of business. Lead-acid batteries, unfortunately, tend to be heavy. They're not especially cutting-edge in technology, 100-year-old technology, but they're cheap, and a lot of these electric bikes still use lead-acid. So for better range and just all-around pleasure, I sure would like to switch to nickel metal hydride, lithium-ion. It's just a matter of making enough of those batteries for the manufacturers to sell them at a more affordable price. This e-bike does go about 17 miles an hour. You have the option of pedaling it a tiny bit or not at all, or you can fully pedal it. So whatever speed you want to go, you can either have the electric motor take up to all the load and you just sit there basically and ride, or you can pedal it like a bicycle. And that's something I like. As I mentioned, what I don't like is the heaviness of the battery, but the rest of the bike is quite light. And interestingly, the motor, which is the sort of the brains of the outfit there, the motor that turns the bike, the wheel itself, is actually very compact, very small. It's not much bigger than the hub. So that's hence the sort of interest in fuel cells, for example, as a way of providing the power from a hydrogen source on a little scooter. And that might be a really great idea. I mean, I think of China with 1 billion people wanting to increasingly be mobile. If the model in China could be a more efficient transportation system, if hydrogen fuel cells scooters were available, I think that would be a real market opportunity.
Now, have you accommodated in terms of your solar use with refrigerators and appliances? Are you working to find the most efficient? Because there are some that are truly solar designed. Those things will dramatically increase your capacity to survive as these technologies come online.
Yeah, there's definitely a few units that I know about that are made, as you say, for the solar enthusiast, and they literally just sip. I mean, they just sip power. And we're more the latter model. We're living the sort of regular lifestyle. When our refrigerator burns out, we'll probably get the most efficient, energy efficient, sort of commercial regular model that one might find at a large, retail outfit. So we're not going to get the solar, the really sip kind of efficiency refrigerator, but we'll probably get about the best, most efficient. We'll look in the Consumer Reports guide for the most energy efficient. So for example, we had, when we walked in, we have a large screen TV, and my brother, who bought it very kindly for us as a gift, wanted to buy us a plasma TV, and I looked at the power consumption, and lo and behold, these plasma TVs are sucking down 400, 500, 600 watts. We're gonna get a 55-inch TV, and that was a lot of power. So I looked at these DLP diode, TVs, and I found one from Sony that was using 275 watts. So instead of a plasma, we got this beautiful 55-inch widescreen DLP type TV that uses about half the power. And it's, as beautiful a picture as any plasma I've seen. So we simply do little things like that. If we're going to buy a TV, we look at the power consumption. And same, as I say, with our next refrigerator.
So you're very much a nearly totally solar-powered home in a sense. You're almost to the point now where it's a break-even point. Kids are home and stuff. But is there anything where you're just saying this isn't working?
Well, actually, it's funny because my wife and kids just pulled up. They'd be good ones to ask. I know that I cringe a little bit when the hair dryers go on, because those little handheld hair dryers are 1,500 watts. And but here's my kids. They just came out of the car, and they look like a couple of regular American kids. They don't do anything, I think, that's unusual. They live the regular American lifestyle. I could ask my wife, honey, are you giving up? We're on doing a radio program. Are you giving up anything to live this sort of more solar efficient lifestyle? She's looking around.
But I'm going to run over. Hold on a second. So we've been talking about lifestyles in Southern California. What kind of accommodations? Are you having to make accommodations to this, or does it just plain work?
None at all. If anything, we've been living a better lifestyle now than we did before. We feel really good about what we're doing. I feel great when I flip on a switch or turn on our big screen TV that I'm not being wasteful in a way, that at least we're harvesting what we can that's coming to us free, and I'm not creating pollution somewhere else by turning on that switch. So in a way, it makes me feel really good. And what we're really trying to do is we want to conserve wherever we can, which is why Rob probably showed you we have the fluorescent bulbs everywhere. And, we try not to be wasteful in our day-to-day living. But it sure takes a lot of the guilt away, having these nice things.
Just curious if either of you guys, if I could ask a simple question. Would that be all right? Either of you want to talk? If you do, just let me know. Hi, what's your name?
Sophia.
And what do you think of all this solar and all of this different way of kind of producing electricity?
I don't care about it. I just play around with my dog when I go to school and watch TV. And when our time's up, I just go swimming and play with my puppy.
Now, I hear that swimming pool is heated by the sun. Is that pretty neat?
Not that much, because I just live with it.
Well, that's the best endorsement there is, actually, and that's the fact that it's not even, there's no change required.
That's right.
Sydney, they really aren't living in any way that's very different, but she just mentioned something that I have to give a plug to, which is we just got this machine called TV Allowance, and it actually limits the number of hours that they can watch TV per day. It's automatic. We just plug in the number of hours, and they plug in a code whenever they want to watch TV. It keeps track for the week, and at the end of the week, it turns itself, well, through the week, if they watch too many hours, it'll turn itself off, but it just keeps track of it, and I found that to be very useful, and it's, you know, is it literally power conservation? Well, probably not, but it's part of sort of this good lifestyle that we have.
I think it is power conservation, that TV's not on as many hours now as it was before.
I was saying that one of the things that happens just naturally is you become suddenly aware of all of these little things, and you become, I mean, it becomes part of your life. How are you noticing that?
I go to that site. I go to the website, the wildershares.com. When I'm at work, I look at that site, and I want to make sure that we're generating more than we're using. And I definitely think about it every day. And that, yeah, being more conscious of it. Most people don't think about it, and I certainly didn't a few years ago. I never thought about it when I flipped a switch on. But now, it's every appliance. If we want to get something, we think about the wattage. We think about, okay, how much is this going to use, and when are we going to use it? And it's definitely on our minds.
You know what just occurred to me, which I think is interesting? And that is that all of a sudden you have a real sense of limits. You have a solar system and you have systems. And if you exceed that, then all of a sudden you're going backwards. So you actually have something to shoot for. You can live within your limits. If you can try at least.
Well, I actually see it the opposite. I see it as unlimited because I'm just going to bring in more solar power and add some wind power and some micro hydro and be unlimited. But, you know, one of the coolest things for me has been just knowing how much power I use and generate. And, you know, it's like living on a boat, living on a little island where you're just made much more aware of it. And it's actually pretty sexy. It's pretty fun. It's really pretty neat to know to, at the end of the day when I'm just sort of on my computer, take a look at how much power did I use today. And I can see every hour this little graph. Oh, here's where we turned on the stove and we made this and that. And I actually, when I travel, like I'm going to New York tomorrow, I'll be able to sort of monitor the life, like the respiration of an animal, monitor the respiration of our house energy-wise. I'll see when my wife makes her coffee, when she wakes up. It's just sort of fun to watch that energy-wise. But yeah, knowing how much energy I consume and how much I generate, it's fun.
So you also talk about microhydro. What in the world is that?
Well, you know, like so many people, we've got sun that lands on our roof, and we can put solar cells up that turn that into electricity. We've got the wind that blows up above ourselves, and we'll be putting up, you know, some like to have some sort of wind turbine to capture that. But not everyone has this, but we happen to have a little stream that goes through our property. We've got an acre, and with just a little, basically a motor that's in essence wired backwards. I mean, if you put electricity into a motor, it turns. And the opposite works, where if you take a motor and you put it down in an encasing in a stream bed, and the water turns a little turbine, out comes electricity. It's just the same principle backwards. And that's just simply another way yet to make electricity. So, you know, I like to make electricity during the day when the sun's shining, or at night if there's wind, or, you know, night or day if it's raining and there's a little bit of stream running.
Well, what's really amazing is the fact that as we look out into the future here, these are going to become much more commonplace. Our lifestyles don't really have to change. We can move into this transit. We can transition into this new way and without really sacrificing anything as far as I can tell. Rob Wilder, thanks so much for sharing your life, opening up your home, and also your dreams.
Thank you, Sydney. I've got a happy family here. They like living the solar lifestyle and the clean energy lifestyle, and I appreciate it. And thank you to your listeners. Thank you to you.
And so it is. I'm believing that we have everything going for us if we can keep this momentum going. Have we gone wrong too long? You bet. Can we change the tide? Oh, yes. And the tide is on our side. And so too the wind and the sun and the spirit of innovation and discovery that has inspired a world of wondrous opportunities. Now it is clear that we can tie the wondrous to the wonder and move forward. But don't dally. The time is now. And the time is gone for this edition of the Wild Side News. So come back next Thursday or any time on the archives and bring your friends along as we explore the possible. This is Sydney Wildsmith, saying adios until we meet again and share our voice of the earth here on the Wild Side News.